accentuating the melon shape. She's wearing a long-sleeved baseball-style shirt, the arms of which are a different color from the body, and her deep blue sleeves are pushed up to her elbows. Her thick, dark hair is pulled up into a high ponytail, and her socks have little cartoon bacon and eggs printed on them. The skin of her stomach is showing, but I refuse to look, knowing I won't be able to stop. Nora walks over to the oven and pulls out a tray of biscuits. Or maybe they're scones? Probably scones. I typically don't care for them. Grind sells only incredibly healthy scones that taste like olive oil-covered grains baked into wheatgrass bread. Not for me. My mom's professional-level skills as a baker ruined me for anybody else's cookies or cakes. Our house was always full of sweets, which is probably why I was a pudgy kid. I have to work a little harder than normal people to be able to eat the things I like without putting on weight. It took me a while to realize that, but I'm glad I did. I remember how it felt when the assholes at my high school stopped having a reason to make fun of my weight. Not that they didn't find another reason to treat me like shit, but I felt lighter, mentally and physically, and I started gaining a confidence I'd never felt before. Tessa and Nora have been in the kitchen every day this week, but I've been hiding in my room, trying to get my school assignments done and just plain crashing after work. Even in my dreams, I hear the displeased customers' voices as they stare at the menu board on the wall.
Do you have, like, frappuccinos here, like Starbucks?
Why don't you have cashew milk?
What's the difference between a cappuccino and a latte?
I only worked 3 hours tonight, but this week has exhausted me. As tired as I am, though, I don't think I want to hide in my room tonight. I want to talk to Tessa, and even to Nora. I hate the way my chest tightens when she looks at me, the way her eyes always catch mine. I'm making a choice to be social tonight. It's nice for me to engage with people, even if it's just the two of them. Nora takes the scones off the hot pan and places them on a cooling rack. They smell like blueberries. I sit down at the small three-person table and watch Nora move around the room. She picks up a plastic bag full of yellow goo and twists the end, creating a puffy triangle of creamy icing. She places a small metal tip on the pointy end and squeezes the icing on top of each scone. Nora says something about how icing makes scones taste better, but I'm too busy trying to make sure my eyes don't linger on her ass for a beat too long to really pay attention. I'm also suddenly struck with the question of whether I should stay out here with them or not. I don't want to be in the way.
How is work? Tessa asks.
She dips her finger into a bowl of thick batter, speckled with blue chunks. Blueberries, maybe? Her mouth opens, and she pops her finger into her mouth. I look over at Nora, who's pushing up her sleeves again, which leads me to notice the material at the bottom of the shirt. It looks like it's been cut with scissors to reveal the bottom 4 inches of her abdomen. I usually wouldn't mind this, not one bit. I can't imagine that anyone would, unless they too were tortured by the temptation that is Nora, while also knowing that nothing could come of it. Her skin is a few shades darker than mine, and I can't tell her ethnicity by simply looking at her. I do know, though, that she's a mix of something beautiful and unique. I'm not sure what it is specifically, but the almond shape of her eyes is striking. And so are the dark brows and the thick lashes that shade her high cheekbones. That shirt she's wearing looks perfect on her, just like every trendy outfit I've seen her in. Her hips are full, and the way her white cotton pants cling to her ass is hard to look away from. Did I already say that? I allow myself a few seconds to look at her. Really look at her. It won't hurt just to stare for a second or two, right? She's so oblivious to my gaze, to my longing to run my fingers along the bare skin of her back. My thoughts take me there, to a world where Nora is lying next to me, my fingers moving their way across her tanned skin. I would love to see her fresh out of a shower. Her hair would be wet, wavy at the ends, and her skin would be dewy, her dark lashes even blacker against her skin when she blinks.
That bad, huh?
Nora asks. I shake my head. I was so lost in my own thoughts that I didn't respond to Tessa's question about my workday. I tell her it was the same as usual, crowded and fast-paced. The first few weeks of college are a busy time for coffee shops, even across the bridge in Brooklyn. I don't bore them with the details of the nozzle on the sink breaking off, spraying water all over Aiden. I can't say I didn't laugh when he wasn't looking. He was so pissed that his hair got messed up. It was all the funnier because it had been his idea to toy with the nozzle in the first place, claiming that he knew how to fix the leak. Draco foiled again. Tessa tells me that she picked up extra shifts for the next two weekends, and I know that by mentioning her work schedule, she's also really itching to know when Harden is coming so she can keep her distance. I should tell her that he's coming next weekend, and I intend to, but I'm going to wait until Nora leaves so Tessa can have some time alone to get used to the idea and figure out how to prepare herself. I've watched the light in Tessa drain away with each day she's in the city, alone. All the while she's hearing about how Harden is thriving under the influence of his new group of friends and the advice of his therapist. I truly think he's getting better and that this time away is necessary for him, even if he loathes it. If the two of them don't end up married with a bunch of stubborn, shaggy-haired children, I will lose all my faith and love. I hate the word therapist. It adds such a stigma to someone who spends their life attempting to heal others. Somehow it's been deemed inappropriate to talk about your therapist at the water coolers at your day job, yet spreading gossip about your coworkers' lives is completely acceptable. Sometimes the world's priorities are really messed up. Have you heard from your mom? Tessa asks me. Nora moves comfortably around the kitchen again. She washes the cooling racks and wets a sponge to wipe the countertops clean while I explain to Tessa that my little sister is using my mom's belly for soccer training. She swears that little Abby will be first pick in the MLS Super Draft, I tell them. My mom says her body aches and aches at night, making room for the baby growing inside. She isn't complaining, though. She's awed and fascinated by the changes her body is undergoing at her age, and she's eternally grateful to have had a healthy, uneventful pregnancy. You lost me at MLD Super Something, Nora chirps, her lips quirking up to one side in amusement. Slight amusement. Her eyes always seem to have a touch of boredom, like her life prior to the current moment was much more exciting in some important way. I was talking about soccer. You don't watch any sports? I ask. I know Tessa doesn't. Nora shakes her head. Nope. I'd rather cut my own eyes out and eat them with ketchup. I laugh at her very detailed and fairly morbid reply. Well then. I reach for a scone that she already covered in icing, and she stops my hand just before I grab it. You have to let the icing cool, she explains, her hand still on mine. Just like 3 minutes, Tessa adds. Nora's hand is so warm. Why isn't she letting go? And why don't I want her to? I was supposed to be forgetting about any sort of attraction I have for her. I was supposed to get used to my spot in the friend zone. It seems pointless to keep asking myself these stupid questions about why I feel this or feel that, but I'm trying to feel slightly more in control of myself, and asking questions seems like a way to do that. I need to constantly remind myself to stay in the friend zone. It's hard to do this when she's sitting here, looking at me like this, touching me like this, wearing that. I glance down at our hands, hers darker than mine, and when my eyes catch hers, she seems to remember that she shouldn't be holding my hand like this. Friends don't hold hands. Tessa's phone rings and Nora jumps. Her cheeks flare and I want to reach for her again, but I can't. It's my boss. I'm going to take this, Tessa says. She pauses for a moment and glances at both of us, silently asking if we're okay to be left alone. Nora gives her a small smile, her eyes saying what her mouth and mine can't. With every step that Tessa takes down the hall, the air in the kitchen grows thicker. Nora keeps herself occupied by pulling a pan from the counter and tossing it into the sink. She turns on the water, grabs the bottle of dishwashing liquid, and gets to scrubbing. I don't know if I should just stand here awkwardly while she washes the pan, or if I should just go in my room and spend the night alone, again. I pull out my phone and scroll through the last few text messages I received. I have a text from Posey, a meme about baristas. A quiet laugh rocks through me and Nora's shoulders tilt toward me. She seems to stop herself before she completely turns around. She grabs the bottle of soap and squeezes again. Little angry bubbles float around her, and I notice that she's still scrubbing the same pan. I take a silent step toward her and look into the sink. The pan is clean, no cake residue left, its surface all shiny despite a thick and completely unnecessary coat of bubbly soap. Her hands work the already clean pan, and I take another step closer to her. My foot catches on one of the legs of the wooden kitchen chairs, and she jumps at the noise. "So, how have you been? Anything new?" I ask, like I've never spoken to her before and like I didn't just trip over a chair. Nora's shoulders lift with a deep breath, and she shakes her head, her dark ponytail waving back and forth with her movements. "Not really," is all she says, and her hands go back to scrubbing the pan. Finally, she rinses it and lays it to dry on the wire rack next to the sink. Where is Tessa? I wish she would come back and break the awkwardness in the kitchen. How's work going? Do you still like it there? I just can't shut the hell up. Nora shrugs again, and I think I hear her say, "It's okay." "Are you mad at me or something?" my mouth says for me. "Mad at me? Am I five, asking Carter if he's mad that my mom accidentally ran over his toy in the driveway?" Before I can stumble further and make things even more awkward between the two of us, Nora turns around to face me. The curve of her throat seems to be pulsing, her chest rising and falling in a slow throb. My own chest is on fire, a hollow feeling that doesn't belong there, not because of someone who's practically a stranger. "Mad at you? For what?" There's sincerity in her eyes when she speaks to me. Her lips are pouty, and she's waiting for an answer that's somehow harder for me to give than it should be. I rub my hand over the back of my neck, thinking, 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 always thinking. Everything, the Dakota thing, the kiss, the... When Nora opens her mouth to speak, I stop mid-sentence to let her. She leans her elbow against the counter, and her eyes focus on me. She's staring hard, and in this moment I wish I knew her well enough to know what she's thinking, how she's feeling. I can't read her, no matter how badly I want to. I'm usually good at figuring out people and their behaviors. I can usually tell when someone is feeling something, even when they're trying their best to hide it. The quick movement of their eyes to the opposite side of the room, or the subtle shift of their body weight. There are a million ways to read someone. "I'm not mad at you at all. It's all been a little messy, yes," she says, and something about the way her voice catches at the end of her sentence makes me uneasy. I have never wanted anything more than to know about the parts of herself that she keeps hidden. Her whole being reminds me of some sort of secret, the closest thing to discovering a true life mystery, one that's difficult to solve but that tantalizes you with the prospect of a solution. "Landon, the reason why..." But her voice is interrupted by the creak of sneakers on the clean tile floor. I turn. The white sneakers touching the floor belong to a pair of tightly covered legs. The body is thin, wearing a sparkling tutu and black bodysuit. Dakota's eyes scan Nora, standing only inches away from me. and she seems to morph into something bigger, something darker and stronger. Dakota squares her shoulders and pushes out her chest, demanding attention. Dakota. I instinctively step toward her and away from Nora.
So this is where you went, she says.
I'm confused for a moment before I realize that she's not talking to me. She's facing Nora now. Nora's eyes meet mine.
No, I was just here with Tessa.
Dakota cuts her off mid-sentence.
I told you to leave, not to come running to him.
And I'm so confused by what's going on. Dakota's voice is rising like an angry tide ready to swallow my tiny Brooklyn apartment.
I told you to stay away from him, Dakota says. He's off limits. We agreed.
Dakota's eyes are narrow slits, and Nora's are wide saucers. She still seems shocked at seeing Dakota in the kitchen.
I better go.
Nora reaches for the dishcloth on the counter to dry off her hands. She does so quickly, and Dakota and I stand in silence as she leaves the kitchen without looking at either of us. The front door opens and closes in less than 20 seconds, and she's gone without so much as a goodbye to Tessa. She's so quick, and I'm so much in shock that I didn't even have a chance to follow her. I briefly wonder if I would have, and how Dakota would react if I did.
Chapter 20.
Dakota is standing in the kitchen, her eyes on me and her mouth set in an angry frown. Her hair is down, wild ringlets running loose over her shoulders. She's picking at her fingernails, and I really don't like the way she's behaving, acting like we're in high school. Scratch that, she's acting full-on elementary, and the tutu she's wearing isn't helping make her look like an adult.
What was that all about? What's up with you? I ask.
Well, it came out more like a demand, but I need some answers. None of this makes sense. And of course, she's immediately on the defensive, glaring at me as though I'm the one acting like a jealous child. Dakota doesn't say anything, she just stares at me. And suddenly, her gaze softens. Her lips pout out and she leans casually against the kitchen counter as if nothing just happened. I decide not to let this one go. Why did you just chase Tessa's friend from our apartment? Dakota looks me over. I assume that she's using her silence to buy herself time to decide what to say. Finally, after a few more seconds, she sighs and begins to speak.
She's not just Tessa's friend to me, Landon. She's my roommate, and I don't want her hanging around you. She's not good for you, and I'm not going to let her attach herself to you.
She pauses a beat, then adds, I refuse to let that happen. I don't know what's worse, the tone of her voice or the jealousy and possessiveness that thread through her words, but my skin prickles and adrenaline builds in my chest. Okay, first of all, I had no idea you two were roommates. So I'm still processing that. And second, you don't get to decide who's good for me, Dakota, I say. She blanches like I've smacked her across the face.
So you actually do like her?
Dakota's mouth twists into a grimace as she hurls these words at me. I'm getting angrier at her by the second, and I can feel the tension between us building with every rise and fall of her chest. No. Well, I don't know what I feel about her, honestly. My answer sounds like I'm avoiding the truth, but I truly don't know. I've always been honest with Dakota, save for those rare moments when the truth was better left unsaid. What I do know is that Dakota doesn't get to be the one who decides who gets to attach herself to me. Dakota walks across the kitchen to me, her glittery tutu swaying with every step.
Well, try to figure it out, because I don't want you to be confused about how you feel about me either.
She rolls her eyes. I recognize this tone, this guardedness. Cut it out. Turn it on, I tell her. She knows exactly what I mean. Dakota is good at turning her emotions off and completely detaching herself from any danger of pain, and throughout the years I've been good at reminding her to turn them on and lower the guard. Only when it's safe to do so, though. I've always wanted to keep her safe. She sighs in defeat.
I've been thinking about you so much lately. What about me? I ask her. Dakota swallows and pulls her bottom lip between her teeth. Just that I love you, Landon. She says the words so casually, as if they wouldn't unwind something inside of me, a knot pulled so tight, stuck underneath my rib cage, waiting for her to untie it, to ease the pain. I haven't heard those words from her mouth since before I moved to New York. Those three words used to be as natural sounding to my ears as hearing my own name, but not anymore. Now they cut at me, lashing at the progress I've made in recovering from the pain and the loneliness that came with her leaving me. These three words threaten to break the already fragile fort I've been working on constructing since she decided she didn't want me. These three words are much more significant to me than she can even fathom, and I feel like my heart is going to rip angrily from my chest at any moment. I wasn't expecting a declaration of love. I was prepared for her to throw angry words at me, not this. I don't know which would have hurt worse, to be honest. I do, Landon. Dakota's voice cuts through my silence, and I close my eyes. I've loved you ever since I can remember, and I'm sorry that I keep causing trouble in your life. I hurt you, I know I did, and I'm so sorry. Her voice breaks at the end, and her eyes gloss with tears. She's standing closer now, close enough for me to hear her breathing. I was selfish. I still am, and as fucked up as it is, I can't bear to see you with anyone else. I'm not ready to share you. I remember the first time I saw you. I open my eyes and try to catch my breath. I should stop her from digging up old memories, but I can't bring myself to do it. I want to hear her say them. I need to hear them. You were riding your bike up and down the street. I could see you from the window in my room. Carter had just gotten home from some camping trip, and one of the parents called my dad with some rumor, something about Carter trying to kiss another boy. My heart sinks as her words gnaw at me. She never talks about Carter, not in this much detail, not anymore. My dad came barreling down the hallway, belt in hand. She shudders at the memory. I do, too. Everything was so loud. I remember thinking the house was going to fall down if he didn't stop. Dakota is staring past me. She's no longer in New York. She's back in Saginaw, and I'm there with her. You were riding your bike in the street, and your mom was out there with you, taking pictures, or videos maybe. And when Carter started to scream with every lash of that leather belt, I watched you and your mom. She fell somehow, like she tripped over her own feet or something. And you ran over to her, like you were the parent and she was the child. I remember wishing I could be strong, like you, and help Carter. But I knew I couldn't. Her lip begins to quiver and my chest is aching, pain shooting through me like a burning star. You know how it was, how bad it was when I tried to help. I did know. I witnessed her father's abuse of Carter a few times. My mom called the cops twice before we learned that the system was flawed, so very flawed, and much more complicated than two kids could imagine. My feet shuffle and bring me closer to Dakota without my mind's permission. She holds up a small hand and I stop in my tracks. Just listen. Don't try to fix anything, she urges. I do everything I can to abide by her wishes. I stare at the green numbers on the stove and tuck my hands behind my back. It's almost 9, the day having flown by without me. I continue to focus on the numbers as she goes on. I remember the first time you talked to me. The first time you told me you loved me. Do you remember the first time you told me you loved me? I do remember. How could I possibly forget that day? Dakota had run away. Carter told me she had been missing for hours. Her dad, drunk and seemingly unfazed that his 15-year-old daughter was nowhere to be found, sat in his stained recliner, a cold beer can sweating in his hand. His stomach had grown fuller. All the liquor and beer had to go somewhere. His face hadn't been shaved in weeks. The hair on his chin was unruly, growing thick and rough in patches on his face. I couldn't get a response from him. I couldn't even get him to glance away from the damn television screen. I remember he was watching CSI, and the small living room was full of smoke and cluttered with junk. Empty beer cans covered the table, and unread magazines were piled on the floor. "Where is she?" I asked him for the fifth time. My voice was so loud that I was scared he was going to react and hit me like he did his son. He didn't, though. He just sat there, lazily staring at the screen, and I gave up quickly, knowing he was too intoxicated to do anything useful. He moved, and I jumped back a little, my fear soothed when he reached for his pack of basic cigarettes. When he grabbed the ashtray, cigarette butts and ashes fell onto the brown carpet. He didn't seem to notice, just the way he didn't seem to notice me standing there, asking where his only daughter was. I got on my bike and rode around the neighborhood, stopping everyone who passed. I began to panic after Buddy, one of the drunks who lived by the woods, said he saw her run into the woods. We called the rows of trees and trash the Patch, and it was full of people whose lives were empty. Drugs and liquor was all they had, and they littered the woods with it. The Patch wasn't safe, and she wasn't safe in it. I dropped my bike at the edge of the spruce trees and ran into the darkness like my life depended on it. In a way, it did. I ignored the drunken voices and the ache of my muscles as I ran toward the center. The Patch wasn't very big. You could run from one side to the other in about 5 minutes. I found her near the middle, alone, unharmed, her back against a tree. When I found her, my lungs burned and I could barely breathe. But she was safe, and that's all that mattered. She was sitting cross-legged on the ground of the woods, dirt and sticks and leaves surrounding her. And at the sight of her, I had never been more relieved in my life. She looked up at me and saw me standing in front of her, my hands on my knees, trying to catch my breath.
"Landon?" She sounded confused. "What are you doing here?"
"Trying to find you. Why are you out here? You know what this place is like." I was shouting, which spurred her to look around, her dark eyes taking in the surroundings. A blanket hung on broken branches, ripped and dirty, being used as a makeshift tent. Beer bottles lay scattered on the ground. It had recently rained, and the rain hadn't dried in some places, leaving wet trash and mud puddles all around us. I stood up straight and reached out my hand to her. "You shouldn't ever, ever come out here again. It's not safe." She seemed like she was in a trance when she ignored my hand and spoke.
"I could kill him, you know? I would get away with it, I think."
My heart sank with my body, and I leaned against the tree and wrapped my fingers through hers.
"I've been watching a lot of crime shows, and with the way he drinks and the trouble he causes, I could get away with it. I could take whatever money the house is worth and get out of this shitty town. Me, you, Carter, we can go, Landon, we can."
Her voice was full of a painful urgency, and it killed me to realize she was borderline serious about this plan.
"No one would miss him."
A small part of me wished I could go along with it, to ease her pain, even for a few moments. But I knew if I did, reality would sink in for both of us sooner or later anyway, and life would be harder than it already was. I decided to distract her instead of outright telling her that of course she couldn't murder somebody. But she did need to get away from here, even if only by distraction. "Where would we go?" I asked, knowing how much she loved to daydream.
"We could go to New York City. I could dance there, and you could teach. We would be far away from here, but still have the snow."
Throughout our adolescence, each time I asked Dakota this question, she always had a different answer. Sometimes she would suggest that we leave the country. Of all the cities in the world, Paris was her favorite. She had fantasies of dancing at the famous opera house there, but living in Saginaw was reality, and anywhere else just a silly dream.
"We could live in a high rise above the city, even. Anywhere but here, Landon, anywhere but here,"
Her voice was distant, as if she was already living in a place far, far away. When I looked over at her, her eyes were closed. She had a streak of dirt on her cheek, and her knee was scuffed up. She must have fallen, I thought to myself. I would go anywhere with you. You know that, don't you? I asked her. She opened her eyes, and the corner of her lips turned into a smile.
Anywhere?
She asked. Everywhere, I promised.
I love you, she claimed.
I've always loved you, I confessed. Her hand squeezed mine, and she leaned her head on my shoulder, and we sat there until the sun came up, bringing silence to her haunted house. And now, here, in the kitchen of my Brooklyn apartment, remembering our dreams and the roots of our love, Dakota says with a low voice,
You said you've always loved me.
I have, is all I can say back, because it's the truth. Chapter 21 The last 30 minutes have been confusing, to say the least. I don't know how to stop this spiraling into her, or even if I should try. Dakota's words mean so much to me, and yet there's a hint of something missing, some small part of me that isn't totally connecting to them. I'm a bit on guard, and I don't know if I should be so quick to jump when she says jump. The spiral has too much pull on me, and it overcomes that little niggling voice telling me that something's missing. I don't want this moment to end. I don't want her to go. I want her to stay and make up for the times when she left me, to make me feel normal again. It's easier to focus on other people and make everyone around me happy than it is to come to terms with the fact that maybe I'm a little lonelier than I care to admit. It's so easy to fall back into this routine with her. I used to think that I was made to protect her, that every atom of my body was created solely for her purpose. I was happiest when I had her, when I had someone who made me feel important, needed, necessary. Dakota came here, to my apartment. She ran to me. But I wonder, does this mean that she's done running from me? Her body is so close now, so close that I could reach a hand out to her and pull her into my arms if I wanted to. And I do want to. I just need her touch. I need to know if that familiar tingle will spread through my body in the wake of her fingertips. I need to see if she can fill the empty parts of me that she left like holes in my body. I take another step and wrap my arm around her small frame. She leans into me without missing a beat, and my lips move with caution to find hers. Her mouth is so soft. Her lips are clouds that I want to be lost in, high above the world of common sense and far away from our shared pain. I want to float in this space where it's she and I and me and her. No breakups, no tragedy, no shitty parents or exams or long hours of work. The moment my lips graze hers, Dakota's breath hitches and relief floods through me. My mouth is timid. Careful not to rush into this. My tongue glides over hers, and she's melting into me as she always used to do. I bring my other hand to the small of her back and pull her closer. The material of her tutu rustles against my sweats, and she uses both hands to push the sparkling fabric down to the floor, then presses her body against mine. Her body is firmer than I remember. The hard work she's put in is paying off. And I love the way she feels now, solid and mine. She's actually mine. Maybe not forever, but for right now. Dakota's mouth is slightly slack, as if she's forgotten how to kiss me. I rub her back as she tries to remember my mouth. My thumbs trace tiny circles on the small of her back, and she sighs a breath between my lips. Her kiss is slow, and her mouth tastes like tears, and I don't know if they're mine or hers. She sniffles, and I pull away. What's wrong? I ask her. My throat is full of molasses, and my words are slow, stuck in my throat. Are you okay? She nods, and I look down at her face, taking her in. Her brown eyes are shining with tears, and her lips are wet, pouty, and turned down into a frown. What is it? I'm fine, she wipes at her eyes. It's not that I'm sad, I'm just overwhelmed. I've missed you. She sniffles again, and a single tear escapes and runs down her cheek. I tap at it with my thumb, and she breathes heavily into my hand as it cups her cheek. Will you give me time to figure my shit out? Please, Landon. I know I don't deserve another chance, but I will never, ever hurt you again. I'm sorry. I pull her into me, relief and anxiety flooding through me as I hug her to my body. I've been waiting for months to hear these words. Even if she's giving me half a yes, even if she needs time to figure it out. I never expected an apology or anything close to a declaration of love. Maybe that's why they sound so foreign? I've wished to hear these exact words for so long that I feel like I actually willed this to happen. Will this be a blessing or a curse? Or both? I can't stop my mind from whirling. I push my own thoughts aside and comfort her. Shh, I whisper, and rest my chin on top of her head. A few seconds pass, and she pulls away slightly to look up at me. I don't deserve you, she says softly. Her eyes don't meet mine as she continues. But I've never wanted you more. Her head is heavy on my chest as she cries. Her hands are fists full of my t-shirt. A faint ringing sounds through the apartment and Dakota quickly reacts, snapping her head up from my chest. Talk about bad timing. I'm so sorry, it's my agent, she says, rushing to the living room. Well, not agent yet, but he might be. Agent? Since when does she have an agent? Or want one? What the heck does an agent do for a ballet student? I know she's been auditioning for small roles in commercials for the time being, but maybe she's decided to pursue acting? From the living room, her loud voice breaks my thoughts. I have to go. Then Dakota's head pops into the doorway of the kitchen. I'm so sorry, but this is huge. Her tears are gone, her frown replaced by a bright smile. Perhaps my face is registering the utter confusion I'm feeling because she walks into the kitchen saying, I'll come back tomorrow, okay? She leans onto the tips of her toes and kisses me softly on the cheek. Her hand squeezes mine and she looks like a new person. She's happy, she's light. I've missed this version of her and I can't decide if I should be disappointed that she's leaving in the middle of whatever the hell we were doing, or excited for whatever opportunity is coming her way. I choose to be happy for her and not question her motives. I have to work tomorrow, but I'll be here Friday all night after classes, I tell her. Dakota beams. I'll come Friday, then she adds. And maybe I can stay over? She looks at me shyly, like she's never stayed with me before. She bites her lips, and I can't stop my mind from recalling the last time she was in my bed. Well, not the last time, because she was drunk and I didn't touch her, but the time before that. She was beautiful. Her bare skin was shimmering under the dim light in my room at Ken's. She had woken me up in the middle of the night with her mouth around my cock. Her mouth was so warm, so wet, and I was so hard, embarrassing myself by finishing after only a few slow drags of her lips across me. Landon? Dakota knocks me back into reality. Yes, of course. I feel the blood rushing to my cock. Hormones are tricky and embarrassing things. Of course I want you to stay. Good. See you Friday, she says while quickly kissing my lips. She squeezes my hand and rushes out the door. Sleep doesn't come easy. My mind is stuck on my past. As I lie here, staring at my ceiling fan, I'm 16. Writing notes to Dakota in class and hoping I don't get caught. She's giggling at the words I've written down, sexual innuendos that I knew would make her smile. Our teacher was so oblivious most days that we would pass notes back and forth the entire period and never get caught. On this particular day, much to our misfortune, he noticed. He caught me red-handed and forced me to read the message in front of the entire class. My cheeks burned as I spoke, something along the lines of her tasting like chocolate-covered strawberries and that I couldn't wait to devour her. Oh man, I was lame as hell. The class snickered, but Dakota sat with her back straight, smiling at me. She looked at me like she wasn't a lick embarrassed, like she couldn't wait to jump my bones. I honestly thought that she was only trying to make me feel less mortified, to show solidarity against a teacher that would make me reveal such a thing to everyone. But when we were walking home, she did, in fact, push me into a corner of her backyard and jump my bones. It's hard to believe we were only teens when we were together. We went through so much, so many firsts, good and bad. We were good together, and we still can be. Memory after memory floods through my dark bedroom, and my bed has never felt so empty. Friday can't come soon enough. Friday is here, faster than I expected. Yesterday, after classes, I worked at grind until closing. Posey and Aiden were both there, but Aiden was surprisingly quiet, uncharacteristically so. He seemed to be concentrated on something somewhere else. Or maybe he got a therapist who told him that being an obnoxious douche was at the core of his problems. Whatever the reason, I was glad for it. Dakota texted me twice yesterday and once this morning, just to tell me that she can't wait to see me. Her sudden return to affection is still slightly confusing, but with each bit of attention she feeds me, my loneliness fades. It's such an instinctual thing, needing companionship. I never thought of myself as a person who needed someone else to make himself feel complete, and sometimes I question why humans are made this way. Why is it that, since the beginning of our history, we crave company, and we strive to find love? The goal of life, whether you're religious or not, is to find companionship in friends and in lovers. Humans are needy creatures, and it turns out I'm very, very human.
Chapter 22. It's 7 now, and since I haven't heard back from Dakota after this afternoon, I texted her that I can't wait to see her. She texts back a contented-looking smiley face. I don't know how to read emoji, so I decide it's a happy smiley, not a bored one. I hope she's not standing me up. I really, really hope she's not standing me up. I sort of hate that she's unpredictable now. A really big piece of me misses when I was a part of her life. I was her best friend and her lover. She shared her thoughts with me, her hopes, and even her dreams. We dreamed together, we laughed together. I knew every thought she had, every tear she shed. Now I'm an outsider, waiting for her to decide to call me. I miss the days when it wasn't even a question if I was worth her time. Why am I getting so down? I need to perk up and stop thinking of the worst when it comes to her. I'm sure she's just busy, and she will call or text when she can. If she was going to flat out cancel on me, she would tell me. I think. Lying on my bed, staring at the hockey game on my television, I watch a big guy in a teal jersey get slammed against the glass. The San Jose Sharks. I recognize the jerseys of both the Sharks and their opponent. I don't really care for either team, but I'm bored out of my mind and I don't know what to do besides stare at my phone and wait for Dakota to call. Landon? A soft voice is accompanied by a softer knock on my bedroom door. It's Tessa, not Dakota, and I'm trying not to be disappointed. I almost tell her to come in, but I need to get out of my bed. I can't just lie here and wait for Dakota. I can at least go to the living room. Yes, I know it's still pathetic, but sitting on the couch is a little less pathetic than lying in my bed, right? I stand up and walk to the door. When I open it, Tessa is standing in the doorway wearing her work uniform. The lime green tie makes her eyes look even lighter, and her blonde hair is in a long braid resting on her shoulder.
"Hey,"
she says. "Hey." I run my hand over the stubble on my jaw and step in front of her to go toward the living room. Tessa sits down on the opposite end of the couch, and I rest my feet on the coffee table. "What's up? Are you okay?" I ask her.
"Yeah," she pauses. "I think so. Do you remember that guy named Robert? The one who I met when we went to the lake with your mom and Ken?"
I try to remember the details from that trip. The red panties floating in the hot tub, Tessa and Harden barely speaking to each other, the brunette in the black dress playing I Spy with Harden and Tessa on the way down. I don't remember a guy named Robert, except maybe the waiter? Oh shit, I do remember him. He drove Harden half mad. "Yeah, the waiter," I confirm.
"Yes, the waiter. So guess who works with me starting today?"
I raise a brow.
"No way. Here in Brooklyn?"
What a freaking coincidence.
"Yes way," she half jokes.
But I can see she's not really finding it funny. "He came in and I was so surprised to see him here, all the way across the country. He's starting his training as I finish mine. So weird, right?"
"It's definitely weird."
"A little, yeah.
It's like the universe is giving me some sort of test or something."
Her voice is heavy with exhaustion.
"Do you think it's okay for me to be friends with him?
I'm not even close to being ready to date anyone." She looks around the room.
"But I could use more friends. That's okay, right?"
"What? More friends than just me? How could you?" I tease. Tessa kicks out at me, and I grab hold of her pink-socked foot, tickling the sole. She screams and lunges at me, but she's easy to stop. I hold my arms up and wrap them around her, preventing her from whatever revenge she was planning to exact. She screams, and her laughter rings through the apartment. God, I have missed her laughter so much. "Nice try," I say, laughing, tickling her sides. She shrieks again, thrashing around like a fish on a line.
"Landon!"
Tessa shouts dramatically, trying to get free from my grip. This must be what it's like to have a sister. I can't wait for little Abby to come into the world. I better stay in shape so I can keep up with her. Sometimes I worry that the gap in our ages will be too big, that she won't want to be close to me. Tessa is still kicking, and I've loosened my hold on her. She's red-faced, and her hair is messy. Her green tie is thrown over her shoulder, and I can't help but burst into laughter. She sticks her tongue out at me. Hearing something, I look toward the hallway. Dakota is standing in the doorway, staring, stone-faced, at Tessa and me on the couch. "Hey," I smile at her, relieved that she didn't stand me up.
"Hi."
"Hey, Dakota," Tessa waves with one hand while trying to fix her braid with the other. I stand up from the couch and walk toward Dakota. She's wearing a white t-shirt hung off one shoulder and barely covering her pink sports bra underneath. Her pants are workout capris, the tight black material clinging to her skin.
"I'm going back to work. If you guys need anything while I'm out, text me," Tessa says.
She grabs her purse from the table and tucks her keys into her apron. We never finished our conversation about Robert, but I don't think she feels comfortable enough around Dakota to talk about it. Still, it's so strange that he's here, living in Brooklyn. If this were a comic book, I would swear he was a creepy stalker or some kind of spy. A spy would be more interesting, for sure. "Will do," I say, just as she walks through the door. Turning to look at Dakota, I notice that she hasn't moved from the spot she was standing in when she came in.
"You look beautiful," I tell her.
She fights a smile.
"So beautiful."
I go over and kiss her on the cheek. "How was your day?" She relaxes, and I can't tell if she's in a bad mood or if she's nervous to be alone with me after all this time.
It was good. I had another audition, that's why I'm late. I came as soon as I could. Although it seems you were fine waiting, though, she says with a hint of sarcasm. Yeah, I was talking to Tessa. She's having a hard time lately. I shrug my shoulders and reach for her hand. When she lets me take it, I lead her to the couch.
Still? Is it Harden, still? She asks.
Yeah, it's always Harden, I half smile, trying not to think too much about his visit next weekend and the fact that I'm a chicken shit and still haven't told Tessa. She knows he's coming, just not how soon. I'm going to try to keep the new old waiter thing under wraps for now. Even though it's a coincidence, Harden will make way more of it.
Well, she seemed fine to me,
Dakota says, looking around the living room. Is something wrong? I ask her. You seem mad or something. How was your audition? She shakes her head and I reach for her feet and place them on my lap. I pull off her sneakers and start rubbing her arches. Dakota's eyes close and she leans her head against the back of the couch.
It was okay. I don't think I'm going to get it. The line for open auditions was still out the door when I left.
I was the third. They probably already forgot about me. I hate when she thinks so low of herself. Doesn't she know how talented she is? How unforgettable she is? I doubt that. There's no way anyone could forget about you.
You're biased.
She gives me a little smile, and I return the gesture with a huge grin. Hardly, I scoff. Have you seen yourself? She rolls her eyes and winces when my fingers press gently at her toes. I pull off her socks, and they stick to her toes. Is that blood? I ask her, slowly peeling off the black cotton.
Probably, she says, like it's no big deal.
Like it's a paper cut that she barely noticed. Sure enough, it's blood. Her toes are crusted with it. I've seen what ballet shoes do to her feet even before she was dancing full-time. They were bad then, but this is worse than I've ever seen.
Jesus, Dakota.
I pull off the other sock.
It's fine. I got new slippers and they just aren't broken in yet.
She tries to move away, but I put my hand on her leg to stop her. Stay here. I lift her feet off of my lap and get up from the couch. I'm getting a washcloth, I tell her. She looks like she wants to say something, but doesn't. I grab a clean washcloth from the bathroom cabinet and run it under warm water. I check the cabinet for aspirin and shake the bottle. Empty, of course. I can't imagine Tessa leaving an empty bottle of anything around, so the blame is mine for this. I glance in the mirror while the washcloth soaks with water and try to tame my hair. The top is getting long, too long, and the back needs trimming. It's starting to curl up on my neck, and unless I want to look like Frodo, I need a haircut soon. I shut off the water and wring the excess out of the washcloth. It's a little too hot, but it will cool down by the time I get back to the living room. Grabbing a dry towel, I walk back to Dakota. But when I find her, she's fast asleep on the couch. Her mouth is slightly open and her eyes are tightly closed. She must really be exhausted. I sit back down, careful not to wake her, and, as gently as I can, dab the cloth on the damaged skin of her feet. She doesn't stir, just lies silently sleeping as I clean her cuts and wipe away the dried blood. She's working herself too hard. From her bloody feet to the pure exhaustion she's wearing on her face right now. I want to spend time with her, but I want her to rest, so gathering up the blood-stained washcloth and the towel, I grab the blanket from the chair and cover her sleeping body with it. What can I do to occupy myself while she sleeps? Tessa is at work, Posey is at work, and thus ends my long list of pals. Chapter 23. In the end, aspirin and Gatorade were the friends I decided to call upon, which meant a trip to the deli.
Ellen is working, and since her birthday is tomorrow, I killed some time seeing what she was up to, nothing much, and asking her what she thought her parents might get her, again, nothing much. Which sounds terrible. So I try to ferret out what she likes, so maybe I can get her something fun. On the way back, I gave my mom a call and talked to her and Ken for a few minutes. When I get back in the apartment, I hang up and hear noise from the living room and figure Dakota's woken back up. Going in, seeing her there looking at me with a sort of confused, "Where the heck have you been?" look, I set my cell phone down on the table as slowly as I can. I do it somewhat comically, but I feel like I'm trapped in an interrogation room or something. Only in this room there are Cheez-Its and bottles of Gatorade, so maybe not so much like an interrogation room. Though, Dakota would make a sexy-ass cop. I can imagine her body dressed in a tight uniform just for me to peel off. The look on her face right now, though, says that if she were a cop, she would arrest me, and not in a sexy, playful, handcuff-me-to-the-bed-and-tease-me way. It was my mom and Ken on the phone. They had an appointment today for little Abby, I say, with a somewhat fake smile. Not fake in that I'm not happy about the baby's progress or that Ken is still head over heels for my mom, but fake because I suddenly get paranoid that Dakota overheard me talking to my mom about Nora right at the end of the conversation. But Nora is my friend, if barely. Still, Dakota hearing her name as I said it to my mom would only further fuel the fire of jealousy she's creating over her roommate. The match in her hand is burning pretty bright now, and I want her to understand that there's nothing to be worried about. Nora wouldn't give me a chance even if I pursued it. It would be messy because of her friendship with Tessa, and I barely know her anyway. So why is this a thing? Dakota gets up and stretches out her back. "So, how is she?" she asks. "Abby, how's she doing in there?" I let out a little tension breath I didn't realize I was holding, and step into the kitchen with my haul. Dakota follows me in, wrapping her arms around my neck and leaning her head on my shoulder. Her hair smells like coconut, and her curls are soft against my cheek. "She's good." They sounded a little worried for a second, but I think I'm just overthinking things. Dakota's breath is warm against my skin. "Overthinking? You? You don't say." She chuckles, and her laugh is beautiful, like she is. I reach my hand up and gently squeeze her arm. "I'm glad she's doing okay. It's still kind of weird to think of your mom being pregnant at her age." Seemingly aware of how her words sound, she quickly recovers, adding, "Not in a bad way. She's the best mom I've ever seen. And both you and Abby are so lucky to have her at any age." "I don't know Ken very well yet, but from what you tell me, he's going to be a great dad." "He will be," I say, and kiss her arm as I put the snacks away in the cabinets. "Let's just hope Abby is more like you and less like..."